Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. We welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, December 22nd, 2014. Just 3 days till Christmas. And our conversation yesterday in the service was that it's actually Christ Mass. And it's holy days, not holidays. And how those things have been changed, just as the word's been changed. And so we hope that everybody gets centered into the right spirit and truly has an awesome holy day. And it's a time to just reconnect and be with who we are and be with loved ones and family and friends and let go of the stuff the society has gotten so wrapped up in that you got to get more stuff for everybody. But anyway, we welcome you to the show. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. And Michael will be with us here shortly. So first, I'm going to welcome Dr. Tim. Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Jeannie. Thank you. And I was thinking that today Michael might get into talking about living the Lord's Prayer as opposed to praying the Lord's Prayer. And one of the things that he talks about, last time he was here, he had a new kind of an insight, a shift, or an epiphany, you might say, that we're looking at the world, and the world might be a 500 trillion bit jigsaw puzzle, and we're looking at maybe 500 to 5,000 bits of that puzzle, and we think we know what it means and what it's about. And Michael got the insight that if we recognize that we're looking at such a limited picture and we stop and just ask the bigger picture, the puzzle, Ruka, Dakucha, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, it will teach us about the whole picture. And ever since Michael shared that with me when he was here, and he shared that with the whole group when we were doing the still point breathing, I had this ringing in the back of my head that Guy Finley talks about that too. And I found it. It's in one of Guy's talks where he says, if you consent and ascend, and if you defend, you will descend. That's the title of the talk. And he talks about seven elements, the last of which is love. And the point of all these elements is to bring you to a place where you see the big picture. And he asks the audience, how many of you suspect that you don't see the big picture? Then he says, the truth is, the more stressed, anxious, and frightened you are, the smaller the picture is that you're looking at. And that's what's so beautiful about the truth. It delivers an individual to a place where they at last begin to give up this image-making mind. there is a commandment that said, thou shalt have no graven images. And whether we see it or not, everything the mind creates in the form of an image is secretly the worshiping by the mind of itself. And if we create any image that leaves us feeling anger, fear, sadness, hurt, confusion, it narrows the vision that we have, and it gives us this tiny, tiny fraction of a picture with which we justify our negative feelings, and we miss the big picture. And the core of this work that Michael puts out and that Jeannie supports and puts out is a tool for removing everything that's less than love from your mind so that you get the big picture. And the big picture is that we're all connected and that it's all about the love, and that's the tool that we're here to talk about.
And that Dr. Tim puts out.
He does indeed.
And supports.
He does indeed.
Thank you, thank you.
Welcome, Michael.
Hey, thank you, sir. Well, you know, with the topic that you're on there, I didn't hear the first couple of minutes. We're trying to chase down packages being on the road before we leave Panama City. But there's a really incredible video that if you go to, if anybody wants to go to the website, there's a link to it, a free watch, and it's called Stress, Portrait of a Killer. And when you're talking about how it narrows perception, what they're showing in that video as well is that pleasure disappears in somebody in that mind under that level of stress. Joy, delight is harder and harder to feel the more deeply we go into that. And so people who are listless in life and depressed, and actually it's kind of one of the things that leads to suicide, it's the level of stress that comes from holding in the mind the goals that perpetuate and keep that narrow view going. So that video really opens another level of looking at exactly what you're speaking about. And when you realize that, it's like, oh man, let's just let this thing go and let's get on. Because we're designed to live in delight and pleasure and abundance and joy and aliveness and all those neat things. So, good input. Good input.
And so, Michael, at the beginning, Dr. Tim was suggesting you talk about living, not saying the Lord's Prayer, and I think that's kind of ironic because that's what your lesson was yesterday morning at the church.
Well, yeah, and that's what we started to talk about on Friday, but never quite got to it. And the reason I was planning to talk about it on Friday is because, of course, it was Aramaic Fridays, and we're looking at the Aramaic idea of the Lord's Prayer. And so, yes, that was exactly my plan today, was to move in that direction. Great minds think alike, right, Tim?
It's been my experience that those who agree with me.
Of course, the other saying in the culture is that fools seldom differ, so we just have to choose which category we're going to live in and go for the one we choose.
Yes.
Cool, cool. All right, well, looking at this idea of the Lord's Prayer, and you know, we'll kind of do Aramaic Fridays today, unless, Jeannie, you've got a hand up from anybody in the phone queue. Jeannie, anything happening there?
No, there's nobody stepped their hand up.
Okay.
And
cool.
Go for it.
Awesome. So the place I like to start out with this particular idea, and when I do a Sunday service with it, and I think we'll get a copy of the one we did yesterday, and we'll get it on the website so people can listen to it. It came together in a different way than I've ever done it before, but I start out with a little scenario, and just imagine whoever's listening to the show, whether you're doing this live or whether it's in the archives, imagine that you are the best translator of Russian into English and English into Russian in the world. And the day that we send out the email that we're doing a week of workshops, you email the location where we're doing the workshops, and ask if they have anyone that speaks Russian that could translate for them. And you come to the workshops. You fly over from Russia, and they're the best translator. There you are. You're the translator. You have an extra room. You house this person. You pick them up at the airport. And, you know, two or three times through the week, we get together for lunch. We have dinner once. And just really have a great time with this fellow. And so at the end of the week, when you're taking him back to the airport, wanting him to know how much I respect him and appreciated having him there, I ask if you will tell him that I think he's really cool. And you turn to him in your best Russian and tell him that I think that he's got a low body temperature. Now, of course, you translated my words perfectly, but you didn't say a word about what I meant. And thus becomes the problem for understanding the Aramaic language, the Aramaic culture, and everything that was taught to us by this ancient teacher named Yeshua. Man thought, taught, spoke, paraboled, storied in Aramaic. And if, just like you've got a low body temperature is a perfect translation but says nothing about meaning, the Aramaic language is rife with idioms, and so there are so many things that you can't speak about in any other language by translating the words, because the words are idiomatic. That is, they don't follow literal meanings. There's a different meaning in it. And you can't translate an idiom. You can only know what it means, and then you can speak about its meaning. So if you think about this this young man from Russia that I've just told him he's got a low body temperature, at least that's what he thinks, you know, is there any basis for intelligent conversation? Might our friend from Russia be confused? Might he wonder what's going on? What business is in mind? Might he be insulted? You know, what might go on for him? What might that me making the comment that he's got a low body temperature have to do? Maybe because I'm a naturopath, he might think that I've spotted some horrible disease that he's got and I'm going to tell him about it. You know, who knows what might go on in his mind? And when you go to the Aramaic, when you look at the Greek translations, there are words, there are ideas, there are concepts in Aramaic that there is absolutely no concept of in the English language, in Latin or in Greek. Zero, no concept, such as the Aramaic head. When you go to the Aramaic, what you find there is you find a translation that is a whole, consistent, coherent body of work, and if you know what it actually says, you will understand why the things were said that were said and what the actual meaning is. There won't be any confusion like the gentleman who's wondering why I'm talking about the temperature of his body. Thing, if you listen to Vladimir Lenin, he says the way to destroy a culture is to change the meaning of its words. Well, you don't even have to change the meaning of the words, particularly from Aramaic to Greek, to Latin, to Old English, to Modern English. All you have to do is have an idiom that nobody knows how to translate. You know, another example that I'll often use is a story about this gentleman who goes to work one day and has challenges at work. So, and imagine that we're going to seal this story of his day into a time capsule. And you're going to be speaking English 2,000 years from now, and you're going to open the time capsule and read it. Let's see if you can imagine 2,000 years from now that this time capsule will make the same sense to you or have anything that resembles the meaning that it has today. You'll know exactly what I'm saying. I'm going to use a series of idioms. But imagine 2,000 years from now, even if it hasn't gone through three or four or five different language mutations, just in English. So here's the story of this fellow's day. I went to the office this morning and found myself in a pickle with my boss. And she canned me. I was cleaning out my desk, stopped and had to go to the can, came back, threw all the garbage from my desk into the garbage can, materials, went home. My wife, who was in the kitchen canning, said, help me if you can. And I said, I can't. Now, can you imagine 2,000 years from now opening the time capsule, trying to make sense of that? Like, hello? If you don't have accurate meanings of words, you know, Vladimir Lenin had that genius piece of information that he offered that said that the way to destroy a culture is to change the meaning of its words. Why, if you change the meaning of a culture's words, do you destroy that culture? Well, culture is based on ideas. And those ideas, in order to be transferred from one mind to another, must be expressed in words. So if we look at, for instance, the Aramaic idea of forgiveness, and I think that this, the loss of the meaning of this word is the greatest tragedy to happen in all of history. If we were to look at all of the tragedies that have gone down through the ages that have impacted the earth, the inhabitants of the earth, whether the inhabitants be ants or humans, the greatest tragedy that has ever happened, beyond all tragedies, is the loss of the meaning of the word forgive. The word forgive means remove. And if one is in a state of hostility or fear, locked into that smaller picture, as Dr. Tim was talking about, and there is no way to remove that from the mind which creates that picture, then if no one can tell you that there is a tool for removal from your mind of what does not belong there, how are you going to remove it? And if you can't remove it, recognizing that things are transferred from generation to generation, what do we have? We have a cumulative database of insanity. We have the cumulative effect of the inability to remove the cause of insanity, which is fear and hostility, from the minds of each succeeding generation. Now, that's a boon for kings, but it's a disaster for our culture. So when you change the meaning of words, you take away the ability to transfer a culture's foundation to future generations. And notice that's where we're going today. As you look at the growing insanity in our culture as a result of the loss of forgiveness, just take a look. You know, we've talked in the past about military suicides. And I'm actually waiting for some updated statistics from someone who works in that arena. But we're looking at least reported, and this is reported through the VA, and the VA only, from what I understand, tracks about one-third of the happenings in that military system. But vets returning from the Middle East wars are committing the suicide at the rate of 25 a day. The third leading cause of death, children age 15 or young people from age 15 to 24, is suicide. The fourth leading cause of babies, that is from 10 to 14, is suicide. You look at the rampant crime, the drug and alcohol abuse, the spousal abuse, the child abuse, the burgeoning prison population. Those things are all disasters created by the loss of the meaning of the word forgive. And until we can restore that meaning and people will actually engage in removing what never belonged, then trauma is the name of the game. There's an interesting passage in Ezekiel that goes back a couple of thousand years, and I'm just looking at my phone right now. This is Ezekiel 33:32, and you look at how many people engage in this work, become intellectually stimulated, excited, and all of that. Let's go back all the way to Ezekiel, and here's what the Creator is saying to Ezekiel. And lo, thou art unto them as a very lovely song of one that has a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument. So we sang to the teachers of this process of healing, people will love to listen to you. And then it goes on to say, For they hear thy words, but they do them not. Now, when I do a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and we've got a room full of people, we maybe got 100 people who are really excited about, oh, that's how forgiveness works. Oh, that's so cool. What I just got in the way of experience when I did that worksheet, that's so cool. Man, I am going to work through this. If I go through a week of workshops and on Friday night, so we go from Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. If Friday night, if I had 100 people in the audience, and I say, how many have done? And in the workshop, if you've been there, you know that I make the suggestion that people do a minimum of 5 worksheets a day. I'll ask how many people have done their 5 worksheets. I will be delighted if 2 people put their hand up. I'll ask if how many have done 4 worksheets. I probably won't get anybody. 3 worksheets? Chances are nobody. 2 worksheets, I might get another 3 hands go up. 1 worksheet, I might get 4 hands go up out of 100 people. And you listen to this statement being made. Ezekiel 33:32. And lo, thou art unto them as a very lovely song, and one that has a good voice and can play well an instrument. For they hear your words, but they do them not. And to get out of that resistance to doing one's work, I mean, it's literally, in the Aramaic language, the word Satan means the resister, one who misleads. And people go, wow, this is such exciting work, Michael. This is so cool. Man, everything I've always known, I now understand. You just gave me it. This is so cool. And 5 days later, so how many worksheets? I've been busy. What's it going to take for people to actually reach in and become willing to look at 1,000 generations of internalized insanity now that they have the tool for removing that insanity? That's what we're looking to support. Now, another disaster in our culture is the loss of the meaning of the word prayer. And you'll be surprised to hear, perhaps, that the word prayer, or pardon me, the so-called, what the Greeks titled the Lord's Prayer, is not a prayer. It's got nothing to do with prayer, except as an instruction set. So the Lord's Prayer is not a prayer. If you remember, the disciples asked the question. They said, teach us to pray. They didn't say, give us a set of words to say. And if you listen to Yeshua in Matthew 6:5-8, and this has got nothing to do with theology or religion. He's giving us an instruction set on how to return to humanity. So you listen to him in Matthew here, and he says, and when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray, standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by men. I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done, you'll notice he doesn't say who hears the words that are said, sees what is done in secret, will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like the pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Creator knows what you need before you even ask for it. Do those words sound like they are inconsistent with the idea of putting your order into the cosmic gift catalog, which is what most everybody has come to believe about prayer? They've destroyed the meaning of the word prayer. Obviously, 2,000 years ago, when he says this, he was instructing on a topic that was very misunderstood and one that is still not understood. And if you take away the how to achieve a result, you can't produce the result. So he's informing us with these words in Matthew that prayer is not about having your list fulfilled. It is silent, it is private, it is eternal. Pardon me, it is internal. So a request of the Creator where you're asking, you know, something of the cosmic gift catalog is a petition. Now, Yeshua says you don't need any petitions because he says the Creator, the Father, knows what you need and gave it to you before you even asked. So you really don't need to ask. I promise you that everything in your life is exactly what you need right now. Now somebody says, no, no, look how that person over there enrages me. Look at all the pain they cause me. Telling yourself a lie, you're caught in blockage of truth, you're in denial. And the part of your mind that holds all that pain that you think they cause you, you've dissociated from by saying, they caused this pain in me. When I shift my language and I own, boy, in that situation, a lot of pain came up in me, a lot of rage, a lot of pain. Now I can start to forgive. I can start to remove my pain instead of be lost in it. So when the word prayer was lost, the ability to pray was lost. Now, what is the ability to pray? What is prayer? Well, in the Aramaic language, the word prayer means to set a trap for God, which sounds kind of strange. Who would want to trap God? What does that even mean? Well, let's take a look at what it means. If you had a TV antenna up on your roof, and you were watching Channel 2 and had a beautiful, clear, awesome picture, then we could rightly say that the antenna was praying. That is, it was setting a trap. Now, in this case, it wasn't a trap for God. It was a trap for Channel 2. But when the antenna is aligned properly, that antenna captures or traps a signal. And the signal is the energy that's needed in order to watch Channel 2. So when you set a trap for God, you become the space where the active presence of love shows up in the world. Your physiology, just like TV antenna, if it's designed properly, the TV antenna is a device that brings a signal into expression. In precisely the same way, your physiology is designed. You are physiologically designed to be a trap for the active presence of love. You're designed to capture the active energy of love and express it, bring it into full expression in the world. That's what prayer means. So when you pray, and you know, I can remember when as a kid they told us you would pray without ceasing. There will come a time when your whole life will become a prayer. And I was taught that prayer was being down on your hands and knees. And the only thing I could imagine out of that is square knees. It's like, how do I do that? What does that mean? When you go to the Aramaic, all of a sudden, that you could possibly actually live your life as the active presence of love, 24/7, 365, and therefore be in prayer continuously, now becomes something sane and sensible. You're designed for that. Your physiology, you were given a device called the body-mind unit that is designed precisely to do that. To be the active presence of love, 24/7, 365, capture that energy and bring it into the world. If you are oriented properly, the same as if your television antenna is oriented properly toward Channel 2, then it traps or brings that signal in, and being oriented properly, the picture is clear, the sound is great. If somebody goes up and bends the arms of the antenna, all of a sudden, you don't see a clear picture of Channel 2. You've got snowy, you know, bad sound, snowy, flipping, rolling picture. Why? Because the antenna is not properly oriented. Well, in precisely the same fashion, you are designed, your physiology is designed to bring the active presence of love into the world. And the world specializes in bending your antenna, in making sure that it is either physically or emotionally so traumatized that love does not enter through you, that love becomes some kind of a thing you go looking for from somebody else. So the kids had that song, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places, and that's what most everybody's doing, looking for love in all the wrong places. And so to pray is to live in and as the active presence of love. And you're designed to do that 24/7, 365. So this idea of prayer. So when they said to Yeshua, go back to the Aramaic 2,000 years ago, saying, tell us some magic words to say, tell us how to put our order into the if catalog, they said, teach us to pray. Teach us how to be the space where the active presence of love shows up in the world through us. So that was their request. It wasn't about give us a set of words to say. Teach us how to express our actual humanity, this active presence of love that we are designed to express. So when you go back and you read that passage where they say, Master, teach us to pray, you're saying, teach us how to be the space of love. They're not saying, giving us some words to babble. Remember in Matthew, he says, don't babble. Don't keep repeating words. That's not what it's about. Now imagine that we had a set of instructions on how to build a machine to heal all disease. And if you follow the instructions to build the machine, all disease will disappear from humanity. And then imagine that you get a group of technicians together, and they gather every day, and they chant, and they sing, and they repeat the instructions to the letter every day for 2,000 years. And particularly on Sunday, they get together and they have beautiful songs written that embody the instructions. But nobody picks up a wrench to build the machine. What do we have? We have rampant increasing disease because nobody knew it was an instruction set. And therefore, standing around speaking many words, you know, nattering the words would produce the result. Mattering the words won't produce the result. Now, if you listen to the result, Yeshua says, if you do what he says, you will love those who hate you, you will do good to those who despitefully use you. Now, think about that for a minute. Where has that gone? You know, I remember a while back, I was in a particular church, and there was a man on the altar who was delivering his sermon, and he was holy, and he was in his robes, and he had all the trimmings and all the stuff that you're supposed to have. And his son was sitting off to the side on the altar. His son was about maybe 2.5 or 3. And his son came forward during his sermon with his arms up, looking for a hug from dad. And if you'd have seen the rage that this guy pointed at his own son because his son was interrupting his beautiful sermon, at least that's how it appeared. It was just like, you know, the energy that turned on his son as he's delivering these words about love was just unbelievable. The man's son. Have you ever turned ugly words on your child? I have. I didn't know any better. I didn't know there was a way to remove ugly words from my mind so that I didn't ever say them until I started to understand the Aramaic. And so you look at if the result that this promises to produce is you will love those who hate you, you will do good to those who despitefully use you. And Yeshua says, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. Obviously, they're pretty clear results. If abundance isn't here and we're not loving those who hate us and doing good to those who despitefully use us, obviously the instructions haven't been understood. It's failed. And you'll notice that we live in a culture that when people don't understand the words that explain how to produce a result and the promised result failed, people make up stories. So we've got all kinds of stories about what it will do to bring you to the point where you are saved. And the only thing you will ever need to be saved from is your own insanity, your own rage, your own guilt, your own grief, your own fear, your own pain. And we were given instructions 2,000 years ago on how to do that. And people have made up stories about some kind of an easy theology that if you say some magic words, then everything's going to be cool and it's going to be handled. But you'll notice in the circles where people believe that, they're still killing each other. They're still, you know, aborting babies. They're still, I mean, it just goes on. They're still committing suicide. Why isn't the result being produced? Because we haven't understood or applied the instructions yet. So the invitation is to really, truly hear this and go beyond what Ezekiel spoke about of, rather than it being nice-sounding words, what this is interesting and intellectually stimulating, to actually engage in the instructions and watch what happens. The stories will look like a joke once you actually engage in the instructions. You know, there's an interesting article in the Smithsonian Magazine. You can Google this and read it, but it's an article about a group of people in Tana, a South Pacific island, if I'm remembering the name correctly. And it's been almost 70 years since America left that area of the world and put an end to World War II. Almost 70 years. And yet today, almost 70 years later, there's a group of people who get together, who dance and chant. They carry an American flag and hoist the American flag. They have bamboo rifles with sharpened points and red-tipped to represent blood. They've made uniforms that look like American uniforms. And every February 15th, they get together to celebrate and pray to the American GI that they call John Frum. And this is an actual happening that still goes on today. 7 years later, they're still praying to John Frum, and the chief, who's got almost no teeth left because the locally produced drug, which is called kava, is a drug that's used every day. And it's interesting, the people who make this kava, they're young men and they have to be virgins and circumcised. They can never have touched a woman. And so their hands are ritual, they're clean, and therefore the kava is not contaminated. And it takes their teeth out. So this toothless leader who leads this celebration says that if we just keep praying to John Frum, then he will bring us, the American airplanes will come back and they will drop for us radios and medicines and washers and trucks and boats and cars. And this mind that doesn't have a clue, you know, the person who does not understand what it takes to produce a boat, a car, you know, this South Pacific Islander who lives in a world of superstition and stories, believes that if they do the rituals that they thought brought all those things 70 years ago, that is, they march in perfect unison, and they still do that today, and they wear these uniforms, and they carry these, you know, what resemble guns with what look like bayonets on them, they really believe that that's what brought the airplanes. They have no idea there was work to be done to build these radios and produce these medicines and produce these refrigerators and trucks and boats. They thought that it was these rituals. They clear a space for what looks like an airstrip, and they do this march, and they carry these guns, and they really believe if we keep praying to John Frum, then the Americans will come back and bring all this cargo to us. They're called cargo cults. That's the kind of stories that get made up. And you look at people 2,000 years later, and they think when they say a set of words that they're praying, because just like the natives on the Pacific Islands, they have no idea that there's some work to be done to produce the result. And so when you look at what was called the Lord's Prayer, again, it's not prayer, it's an instruction set. for producing a result. And my offering to you is that if you actually take this and use it, if you actually carry out the instructions, here's what we can reliably predict. We can reliably predict that suicide will end. Suffering, disease, poverty, crime, and war will disappear. Divorce will cease, and peace and abundance will prevail. If you hear these instructions and actually follow them, then this is what will happen. So this thing that was called the Lord's Prayer is not something that you were meant to say. It's a set of instructions to follow. If we went to the natives on the island in the South Pacific and said, okay, here are the instructions you follow. You have to build yourself a factory. You have to have the designs to build radios and boats and trucks and airplanes and all those sorts of things. And when you follow these instructions and you build these buildings and then you work to produce the result, you're going to have the result. Now, if you went to the chief tomorrow and said, sir, you who are being, you know, hailed as leader have made a huge mistake, and what you're doing is not going to produce anything that you want. Here's what you have to do. What do you suppose he's going to say to you? Do you think you might get your head taken off? You might. And there'll be circles today who will not be happy to hear that they can't just go on babbling and think that they've got anything to do with what Yeshua taught. Because Yeshua didn't teach to babble. He taught the exact opposite of babbling. He gave a set of instructions. And what I'd like to share with you is that set of instructions. And this is an interpretation. It is not a translation. And the reason why I offer you an interpretation is because an interpretation is to take the basic principles of what he offered as instructions 2,000 years ago and apply them to this culture today. We have a much different culture. It's going to take some different dynamics, but the spirit of the instruction set that the Greeks made the mistake of calling a prayer, we should properly entitle it the Lord's or Yeshua's instructions on how to produce the result of wholeness and abundance in your world. And so I'd like to offer an interpretation. The instructions are a little different. We got a little different culture than we had 2,000 years ago, but it's faithful to the spirit of the instructions in the original Aramaic. And so my offering would be that if you'd like to get quiet, you know, you might want to just kind of get to a space where you maybe close your eyes if you're in the place where you can do that and take a deep breath. And recognize that as you do that, in essence, what Yeshua is saying, come the space of love first, for out of that will come everything that you want. And as you do that and allow yourself to take a deep breath, recognize that he's not giving us words to be repeated like drones. Not words to be spoken or believed, but instructions on how to orient yourself, what to do to bring the love of God literally into your physiology so you can fulfill your purpose. So when I talk about the love of God, I'm not talking about a religious idea. Hold a newborn child, you know exactly what that love is. You're designed for that. And this gives a sense of the kinds of things that will produce the result that will cause you to become the space which reflects love and produce a fulfilled life. We're going to invite you to forget your list and become the space. And when you tap into this, the idea here is to align and attune yourself to your true nature. And to do that with sincerity and reverence. And this addresses the issues that need to be dealt with within our culture in order to produce the result of every person functioning as a space of love. And that's what will bring healing and human life into the earth, into our homes, into our country, and into our world. Now, the physicists tell us that being that we are in an energetic world, that time and space, in essence, are figments of our imagination. It's something our minds make up. So if this feels appropriate to you, I'm just going to invite you, as I read through these words, these instructions, I'm going to invite you to just take a deep breath and imagine yourself being transported back 2,000 years ago. You're sitting beside the Sea of Galilee, and there's this man that exudes such an awesomely powerful presence of love that it astounds you. And imagine yourself sitting in his audience, literally, actually being there, and hearing him express this set of instructions. So just let yourself take a couple of deep breaths, and imagine that you're there. And your energy field is in the live field of this man named Yeshua, who is so attuned that he can come up with this set of instructions. So take a deep breath. Allow yourself to go to that place. And here are his instructions. Our eternal creator, parent to us all, was in the realms of the unmanifest. Carve out a space in us for your wholeness and your love, that we may be taught to emulate and serve you. Let counsel, your wisdom, and your love come alive in us, and let your light penetrate us. Attune us to and empower us to conceive of and understand that will which you have already created for us. Teach us so that we may give birth to your fruit. That you renew and feed us daily with the presence of your love, the love of each other, and the food we receive is a gift we gratefully accept. Thank you for restoring us to abundance, teaching us gratitude, and how to give as you give, and presence love as you are the presence of love for both the just and the unjust. That you forgive from us those realities we have engaged in, that do us harm and do not belong in our humanness, is another of your blessings we appreciate. We commit to responsibility and forgiving as to those painful realities that others trigger in us. When we're tempted or lost in materialism or fall out of harmony with your love, that you're there with us, being the space of love. That your love is always present no matter how far we fall, no matter where we go, is a blessing we gratefully accept. That with your grace, you deliver us from our errors, and through your light part us from darkness, is another blessing that flows from your presence. We receive each of these gifts with gratitude and praise, sealed in trust, faith, and truth. Amen. Amen. And as you breathe, recognize that the essence of everything Yeshua taught is encapsulated in this set of instructions. And he basically, if you really review that set of instructions, he gave us five categories that need our attention in order to become the space of love on earth. And if you just notice the order of the instructions, it starts out with an acknowledgement of the Creator, and then the idea of worship, or to emulate. What does worship mean? It means that I follow and I emulate what I am worshiping. People who worship hate and fear and rage and guilt, when the stress is up and the chips are down, turn to their hostility and fear. If you actually emulate the Creator, and when the stress is up and the chips are down, your mind will automatically more and more turn to love rather than fear. Second part of it is, once again, acknowledgement and then appreciation. It's a thanking. Acknowledgement of the Creator and appreciation. Then the third part is acknowledgement of the Creator and forgiveness. A lot of acknowledgement happening here. To really see and experience that behind everything in the universe, there is a power that flows through you when you allow it to. Of that instruction set speaks of our work, our part in the forgiveness process that heals and preserves the space of love in us. It's interesting, in the ancient church, the word that was used for gathering on Sunday morning was liturgy. And the word liturgy means our common work. People came together not to say words, not to do "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done," and let's see if we can get through it as fast as we can. People came together to do their common work. That was liturgy. To really hear this instruction set, review this instruction set until it becomes yours. It's a free MP3. You can download it from the website as soon as it gets linked there. The fifth and final part, once again, goes back to acknowledgement, appreciation. The request to keep us from error and our receptivity to the presence of love. It's just an absolutely awesome set of instructions. And the willingness to receive the gifts that are offered becomes a part of those instructions. And so I invite you to take a deep breath or two. And it looks like we've got about 5 minutes. So do you have anything, any thoughts, anything to share with us?
Well, that's a big shift to go from that.
Yeah. Well, we have a few minutes left, so I'll just open the space.
Well, I suppose the, all there is for me to say is that words just kind of point in the general direction, and I had an experience yesterday. I like being in situations where people are also breathing and meditating, and so I tend to go to church services where that's part of the service. And I find that even though I breathe and meditate on my own, I enjoy being in the environment where others are also doing it. So I just encourage people to do that. If you have a church that you like to go to, even if other people aren't physically closing their eyes and seeming to meditate, just get quiet and close your eyes in that church setting and see if there's a bit of a different experience for you there than there is when you're meditating or breathing at home. I suppose that's all I have to offer. I was just relaxing into what you were suggesting and hearing those instructions from probably a deeper level today.
Cool. Awesome. And yes, you know, when you look at the story of Christian the Lion and how this lion who was brought up by these two young men, of course, or maybe not of course, but end up a year later, after a year in the wild, still recognizing them and coming to befriend them and to be with them, you recognize a space is there from that line, and you can watch if you want to jump on our website. Jeannie's put a link up to a story about Christian the Lion, or you can just Google it and watch it. The amazing thing is that I'm sure that Christian the Lion did not instruct his spouse, his Mrs. Lion, not to eat his friends. And this female is a totally wild, you know, never had contact with humans lion. And, you know, when they come down the hill and find these two young men from England who've come to visit their friend, the female, who's, you know, normally the huntress, she walks right up to them, allows them to pet her. It's about being a space. And so if you have a challenge and difficulty in holding the space or being the space for yourself, it's awesome to be in community. Very few people are ever going to make it from the world of hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and pain to the world of love on their own. It's going to take a community. And those who do it on their own, when they go back into civilization, tend to just go right back to the old ways because they really haven't done what it takes to move into depth, embodying those instructions until they've been in the space where everything unlike those instructions comes forward for them to heal. And so that's what we're here to support.
60
that's
seconds.
The whole process of the work, and we're down to about 60 seconds. So I guess I'm just going to have to say, if anybody has any questions, comments, thoughts, you know, I'd love to hear your experience. Perhaps tomorrow you could bring a stranger to the show with you and call in early in the show, push one, and share with us your experience of what you just heard or questions, thoughts. Does it make sense? Does it not make sense? We'd love to hear from you. So bring a stranger to the show tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.